The time is 1:33. This meeting of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee will come to order. We are in Belch Room 105 here in the Thomas Stewart Building in the very snowy capital city of Juneau, Alaska. Today is Wednesday, March 1st, 2023. Members present are Senator Merrick, Senator Bishop, Senator Dunbar, and myself, Senator Bjork. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Please turn off or silence your cell phones. I would like to recognize and welcome our recording secretary, Juliana Singh, and our LAO moderator, Doug Bridges. For those of you who have not seen the notice, we have canceled today's hearing on Senate Bill 70. An amendment is being drafted, but that amendment is not available at this time. Today on the Teams Hub, we will be hearing from Gloria Burnett, director of the Alaska Center for Rural Health and Health Workforce. Ms. Burnett, welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce. Could you please state your name and affiliation for the record?
Yeah, thank you, Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. My name is Gloria Burnett, and I am the director of the Alaska Center for Rural Health and Health Workforce.
Excellent. And throughout your presentation, do you mind if committee members ask you questions as you go through each slide, or would you prefer that we hold our questions until the end?
I would absolutely love for you to ask questions as you have them and make this a dialogue.
Okay, very good. Please begin.
All right, thank you very much again for the opportunity to present to you all. I am going to be directing slides, so hopefully I can coordinate and let Conrad know what slide to move to. As stated, I'm the director of the Alaska Center for Rural Health and Health Workforce. And what I'm really going to be talking to you all about today is a spectrum of solutions in terms of health workforce development and the challenges that we are seeing. The program that is part of my center that speaks most closely to these issues is the Alaska AHEC, which stands for Area Health Education Centers. And you'll learn more about what that program is and some of the innovations we can learn from healthcare and maybe even how those will be applicable across different sectors that we're seeing workforce shortages here in the state of Alaska. Next slide, please. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about the health workforce shortages. You all are well aware in the world that you are in here with the Labor and Commerce Committee of the workforce shortages we're seeing in the healthcare field. I just wanted to highlight that they are comprehensive workforce shortages across medical, behavioral health, administrative positions, and even in the education sector in terms of hiring faculty to be able to teach these very clinically specialized professions and in the academic setting and in the apprenticeship setting. Across the board, we have these workforce shortages. All of these shortages are exacerbated in our rural communities throughout the state. Next slide. Do you know about the shortages? But I wanted to also highlight some of the impacts of those shortages on all of your constituents and probably if something you've experienced yourself as a patient here in the state of Alaska. We're seeing more and more difficulty accessing healthcare, whether that's long wait lists for appointments or having to go out of state to be able to get the care that we need. We're seeing increases overall to the cost of care. We're seeing decreases, unfortunately, to the quality of care. We are seeing closure of facilities, most recently here in Anchorage. A facility specifically geared towards our elder population here in Anchorage recently closed down, and that's not the only one. I know there's similar things happening in other places across the state. We have a real reliance right now on itinerant staffing, which is then resulting in impaired relationships between patients and their providers. That tight-knit community relationship is just not there as frequently as we've seen it in the past because of that reliance on itinerants. And in turn, we're seeing a lot more reliance on emergency care. And of course, overall, all of those things are leading to vast health inequities throughout the state. So just some highlights of impacts of what these workforce shortages mean to you and your constituents. Next slide, please.
Mr. Chairman, can we have brief fitties?
Brief fitties. We're back on the record. Apologies, Ms. Burnett. We just had to make a technology adjustment here, but we are with you on the slide entitled A Spectrum of Solutions.
Excellent. Thank you. So I really want to focus most of my time with you all talking about the solutions, things that we can do. And when I think about workforce development, I really think about this full spectrum, that we can't attack workforce development from one angle and expect to have progress and see that dial move. We can't think that there's just one solution. The reality is the workforce shortages that we're seeing are so vast. Even if we tripled the number of health graduates we have in the state by growing our own professionals and trying to do this in state, we're still not going to meet the demand. So we have to really think about all of these different types of things that we need to do to make a dent. And we have to be implementing these things simultaneously. So what I have here are a series of three different main categories of solutions that we need to explore to really impact health workforce development. The first is a long-term strategy. It's pipeline programming. When we're thinking about rural communities and we're thinking about underserved communities, the best bet of getting, especially in the state of Alaska, the best bet that we have for long-term retention of healthcare providers is a long-term strategy of getting kiddos from those schools, from those rural communities that live there, that are invested in the community, that grew up there, that were raised there, to be interested in healthcare pathways, so that they will then have that drive to come back to those home communities. So it's a long-term strategy, it's growing your own, and it's not something that we're going to see overnight that's going to work, but it's something that we have to constantly be doing, especially in those rural communities, in order to impact where these students can see themselves down a long-term path in the future. The second strategy is a more of a midterm strategy. We know right now there's a disproportionate level of distribution of healthcare providers. And one of the reasons that the research shows us of why this is happening is because most students in health professions training programs are getting trained in an urban setting, in an urban center. And when you're trained in an urban center and you have your clinical experiences and your practicums in an urban center, you're going to wind up staying in those types of environments because that's what you're familiar with. It's what you've been exposed to. It's what you're building relationships with your preceptors and faculty members and so on. So in order for us to impact that middle term strategy, we've got to change the level of exposure that students have. And we have to also be giving them time in rural communities and in underserved settings as part of their programs of study. So we have to be working on getting them that exposure so that they can start to think about whether or not practicing in some of these really hard to fill locations is something that they're interested in. And then finally, the more short-term strategy, what can we do right now? Part of what we see with retention issues is a lot of our providers are burnt out. They're not getting the support that they need, especially in rural communities where they might be one of the only providers providing care. So continuing education is really important to build that network of retention and get them to connect with their peers, especially when they're in isolated communities. And then the other piece of that is direct incentives and loan repayment. We have to attract more out-of-state talent that is aligned with what I call the grit of being an Alaskan, what it takes to be accepted into Alaskan communities, what it takes to be thriving within Alaskan communities. We have to find those right level of folks, and we have to encourage them to come to the state. And I'm going to talk through in the next few slides what exactly this looks like using the AHEC program as an example. So a little bit about me, and I give you this because I think it's a really good way of giving a specific example of a person and how the impact of exposure to rural community can really grow in Alaskan. I was born in the Bronx, New York. My dad's an immigrant from Italy. My mom is straight up New Yorker. You might even hear it come through in my accent from time to time, although I've gotten away from that. I was the last person anyone that knew me would think would wind up in a place like Utqiagvik, Alaska. I was a city girl. I used to drive into the city on my weekends with my friends, and that was my way. But I went from New York, I went all the way across to Alaska, and my first stop was switching planes to get to Utqiagvik. And I lived out there for 6 years, and I still have my passion in what you could hear in my tone and my voice and everything about me It's all about oral health because of that experience. And I think it's a good example to say that just about anybody can make a rural community their home if they have the right relationships and experience that gets them connected to what makes Alaska special. And I say that across the board, not just Uktiog, but every part of Alaska has something that makes it special. And if we can really get people from the outside to see that and be invested and be prepared to be invested and know what's so special about Alaska, we have a real good shot of keeping them here long term. I have no intention of leaving the state. Next slide. So I wanted to take a kind of step back at this point. You heard me in the beginning mention AHEC. Area Health Education Centers is what it stands for. But what the heck is an AHEC is a question I get lots. So I like to play on those words and provide a little bit of an overview so you can kind of see where the structure of this type of a workforce development strategy really comes from. So next slide. The AHECs are not new. They've been around since 1970. There was a Carnegie Commission report that was issued at that time called Higher Education in the Nation's Health. And the requests or the recommendations of that report were to really create ways to break down silos of academia and the community and build more ways for students that were in healthcare programs to be exposed to our rural communities, to really combat that distribution issue that we see, and to really also grow our own by really focusing on getting kids from rural communities interested in healthcare tracks. The end outcomes that they hope is to increase the diversity of the healthcare workforce to reflect the communities that it serves, improve retention of healthcare professionals in those rural communities, and really work on that distribution piece that I mentioned earlier. Next slide.
Glory, I just want to break in for just 1 minute to let folks Absolutely. Know that Senator Gray Jackson joined us at about 1:40 p.m. Please continue.
All right, so I talked about those different types of programs. AHEC is a great example of what workforce development could look like for these high need areas because it focuses on all three of those strategies that I mentioned earlier. That pipeline programming youth work, that mid-level getting the students that are currently in the field studying exposed to those rural practices, and then finally that big picture long-term. So how do we do this using AHEC as an example? When we go out to rural communities, we go to you. I think it's really important that we show youth what healthcare looks like in their home communities. We're not only showing them what it looks like in an urban center, but we're showing them this is the community health aide. This is who provides care at your sub-regional clinic. Your sub-regional clinic is linked to a regional hub. This is the way LifeMed works. This is the way air transportation works for getting students or getting patients who have emergency care situations out. We really make sure that they understand what healthcare looks like in their communities. And we really flip the narrative too, to ask them what they think the challenges are in their communities and have them thinking about things they can do to engage in community health practice really and programming. And a lot of times this looks like the students really have a need and an interest in improving their home community. And when they start thinking of themselves as part of the solution, the results of the project winds up being twofold. They're healthier humans themselves, and they're able to support and help their community, but they're also thinking about themselves in that future perspective. So you really are tackling healthcare issues in addition to workforce development issues. We offer these throughout the state, all over and by requests from health, both health programs and facilities, and from requests by the school districts themselves to bring the programming. So there's a lot of different ways we enter a community, but the main goal is really to get the students exposed in a fun, hands-on way. But we understand that youth aren't the only ones entering the field. There's also adults re-entering the field or coming back to work or switching careers. So we also do a lot of work with what we call our PATH Academies, which is pre-apprenticeship training, to try to expose people to the possibility of getting entry-level positions within the healthcare field through apprenticeship. So we're able to do that as well. Next slide. Community-based learning, we do this through our AHEC Scholars Program. So we have this open to all health profession students, regardless of what university they attend, as long as they're going to school in Alaska, they're eligible to apply, and they have to have a passion for rural and underserved populations. Like that's the most important thing we look for when we're accepting students. These students get prepared for rural practice and underserved practice. They complete 40 hours of extracurricular didactic, as well as 40 hours of community-based experiential learning, which is the fun part, where we send them out to these communities to get that exposure that I talked about earlier. And we really try to make the exposure not a burden on the already stressed facilities, but more of a support. What can our students do to help you? What are you working on in your community? Are you holding a health fair? Are you doing a vaccination clinic? What can we have our students do to support you while they're in this immersion, so it's not just taxing an already taxed system? We also have been getting a lot of requests from out-of-state students asking, I want to come to Alaska. Can I have an experience in Alaska? So we developed what we call the Rural Immersion Institute of the North. This is an opportunity for students from the lower 48 to pay their own way for an Alaskan experience. We call it an adventure, an educational adventure. And we expose them utilizing educational tourism to all the fun things that keep us here in Alaska, that make us Alaskan. They get to go rafting. They get to go on a glacier cruise. They get to go out hiking. We do walking lectures where they're out and about in the beauty of Alaska experiencing that. And then they go on an immersion. So we prepare them culturally here in Anchorage, and then we send them out. And I've had many students return to the state and choose to work here, some of them in small locations like Kodiak and Ketchikan. Next slide.
Gloria, I have a question. As you're offering these opportunities for training, and you do that at regional centers, is that correct?
Correct.
Which communities are those regional centers in?
Thank you. Yes, absolutely. So we have 6 regional centers throughout the state. 2 of them are physically based in Anchorage, but they're all hosted by host organizations. The reason why one of them is, 2 of them are hosted in Anchorage. One of them is at the Alaska Primary Care Association, but it serves the South Central region of the state, including the Mat-Su Borough, Kenai Peninsula Borough, Kodiak, as well as Cordova, Valdez, and that's that region. And then we also have the Southwest Center that's physically located in Anchorage because it's at the Aleutian Pribilof Island Association. So it's a Southwest serving organization, and they serve everywhere from the Bristol Bay Dillingham down to the Aleutian chain and the Eastern Aleutian tribes. Then we have Bethel at YKHC, the Yukon Kuskokwim AHEC is located there. Tanana Chiefs Conference is the host organization of our Interior Center, and they're located in Fairbanks and serve the interior region. We've got the Northwest AHEC located at Norton Sound Health Corporation in Nome, and that region also includes Uktiagvik and Kotzebue in addition to Nome and all of those surrounding villages. And then we have the Southeast Regional Center, which is located at CERC in Juneau and serves the Southeast region of the state. And what am I missing? I feel like I'm missing one.
I think you got them.
Got them all. All right, good. Oh, that's why I listed the first 2 as based in Anchorage. So that model is the national model. We have to have a program office at an academic center, either a school of nursing or school of medicine. And then 75% of the funds I receive from the Fed go out to those regional centers as their operating budget. It does require a one-to-one match, the program, and right now 75% of our match is in-kind support from our regional centers, and then we kind of piecemeal together that match annually to compose our operating budget. And then finally, I think we flip to the CE slide. This is like the most short-term solutions that we can do that are going to get us providers now, in addition to things like the nursing licensure compact and systems level issues of policy changes. There's also some things we could do to attract Alaskans to the state. One of those being the Sharp Loan Repayment Program. I'm sure you all heard of that program. It works on multiple levels. There's a federal source of funds for primary care providers, and then there's also a private source of funds where individual organizations can tap into this project for direct incentive to keep current employees and utilize it as a retention tool. And we also have the option for loan repayment as well through the SHARP program. What I've been noticing, and I serve on the SHARP Advisory Council, I've been noticing with the folks that are applying, there's oftentimes people apply that don't yet have a job in Alaska. We don't really have a system yet for What do we do to support those people that are interested in jobs here and want the sharp loan repayment program? How do we connect them with the vacancies that we have? And that's something we've really been honing in on this past year. I expect that that's going to become more and more of an issue because the sharp loan repayment program is starting to branch off and do some real targeted marketing campaigns in the next fiscal year in the lower 48 to attract more of that talent to Alaska. The other thing we offer is continuing education. A lot of our work's been surrounding compassion fatigue, burnout, and resiliency, trying to do our best to work out systems level changes within organizations to improve retention of current staff. Next slide. This is my last slide, and I'll open it up for questions. I really do believe that the model that we have here for the AHEC is a very valuable and replicable workforce development solution that I could see working in a variety of industries, not just healthcare. And one of the key reasons why I feel that way is because of the connection to community. A lot of times we're building these training programs and we're building these things in academic centers, but they don't necessarily impact individual communities and trickle down to what the needs are in those individual communities. And the AHEC does a really good job of that through this regional center model. And the fact that it's attacking all of those different levels of that spectrum of the of solutions that exist in order to really make an impact on health workforce development. So we need to really think about how we can invest in these existing solutions, avoid reinventing the wheel, and really seeing what we can do to kind of take what we've done here in healthcare and invest in it and capitalize on it while also considering how it might be helpful in other sectors, especially things like education, where we see very, very similar issues in our rural communities. Thank you again for the opportunity to present to you all. I look forward to hearing what questions you might have.
Senator Grace Jackson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really don't have a question. I just want to say that, frankly, I didn't even know this program existed. And it's really, really exciting, and I appreciate all the work that you do. I can see and feel the passion that you have for what you do. And I also want to thank you for telling us a little bit about you and that you're from the Bronx and a city girl, because I'm from New Jersey and I'm a Jersey girl. And I hear your accent. I'm sure you can hear mine a little. But again, thank you for this presentation. It was amazing. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome. Other questions from the committee? Senator Bishop.
I don't have a question so much as I'd like to hear the rest of the story, how you got from the Bronx to here, because it seems like you got the model on the workforce. Just how do you expound on that and then use your own experience to leverage that to get more people into the workforce?
I hear you loud and clear, and it's a question that my mom asks herself often. How did you get there? I think it's all about the exposure. To me, that the rest of the story is I've never felt a sense of community like I did when I was in Utiapan. And I still rely on that level of community that I built there in all the work that I'm doing because I want to replicate that feeling of community. I think that's something that's so special about Alaska. And it's the selling point that I hear from our students that go out. They say, wow, community looks so much different. And they might have lived in Alaska their whole life, but they never really understood like bush Alaska and how we all really have to rely on each other when we're living out there. And I think that is a really important message. So that exposure gets them to see it because they're feeling it themselves. You could talk about it all you want in academia and you could read about it in all the books, but you never really know unless you walked your footsteps in that pathway and you've been there yourself. And I think that's the special sauce that you need to really latch on to folks and get them to want to be here in our state.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you. So I want to go a little deeper. So were you studying in your room one night and threw a dart against the wall and hit barrel, or did somebody recruit you? That's my question. That's my real question.
So I had a friend that used to go out to Barrow every year. His dad managed a hotel, and he was kind of his backup support. He used to tell me stories, going out for a month, I'm going out for the summer, and he used to always share stories with me about his time. And I graduated with my master's, and he was about to head out, and he said, you don't got nothing planned? Come on, let's go. So I just, on a whim, like just to get the experience, I followed him out and got a one-way ticket thinking I'd stay as long as he did, and wound up getting a job offer. I picked up a job working summer camps at Ilya Sazonik, and I fell in love with it, and the dean at that time wanted me to stay. She handed me a job offer and said, please don't leave. You've got something special, and we want you here. And the rest was kind of history from there. I just fell in love with everything about Alaska.
Was that Ms. Pearl Brower?
Yes, it was.
Okay. Very good.
One of my closest mentors, colleagues, and friends.
Excellent. Well, that's great to hear. Other questions from the committee?
Doing a good job.
I have a couple of questions. So, Gloria, as the legislature considers programs like this through the Department of Labor as well as other avenues, how can the legislature give you the resources and direction that you need to improve the reach and effectiveness of AHEX throughout the state?
Thank you. That's a really good question, and I would be happy to answer. I think the thing that I'm struggling with the most right now in becoming operational, and I've served on the National AHEC Organization Board. I was a past president of that board. I'm really invested in the work that AHEC does nationwide, not just in the state. What I hear from my colleagues in other states as I share with them the struggles I've had, my biggest struggle is I don't have enough staffing to meet the demand. Four of my six regional centers right now are a one-man shop. And the fact that they're able to produce what they produce, given they're only one person, is pretty remarkable, and I'm very, very proud of them. But right now, we're all hands on deck, and I'm sending staff from Southeast to Northwest and staff from Interior to South Central, and we're all over the place trying to make ends meet with the demand that we have to do the work that we're doing, but we don't have a sustainable means to expand our staffing model. That's been really, really difficult. When I talk to my colleagues, they say the best way to do this, the best possible way, is to be part of your state statute language, legislative language, that's supporting the presence of the AHEC, regardless of federal funding, sustaining it as a mechanism for workforce development. And there's many examples of this. And I have those examples from Arizona and Georgia and South Carolina, and kind of those big players that were part of that first generation of AHECs that was established in the 1970s. Those AHECs get state funds, they get state appropriations that are then utilized match. Right now, my team, we're piecemealing together in-kind match, and it's just not giving us staffing capacity. That's the biggest thing, I think. I think other strategies would develop from there, but it's so hard to be a director in a region like the Northwest. I'm going to give that as an example, where you're serving three communities, but you're physically located in Nome, but you have to serve Kotzebue and you have to serve Uktiagvik, yet the logistics of doing that without extra staffing in those communities is darn near impossible. So I think that would be the thing for us to work on as a state over the course of, I know it takes time, but how can we build legislative statute language to uphold programs like these that have these federal resources, but also require this match to be sustainable.
Understood. Senator Bishop.
Lori, have you presented in front of the AWIB board before? Alaska Workforce Investment Board?
Yeah, I've had members of our AHEC steering committee that have been serving on the AWIB, starting with Fred Vila, and then since him, we've had members, and we've been pretty strategic about making sure our steering committee members are represented on AWIB as frequently as we can. Mari Sell was one, Kathy Kraft. So we try to have a presence, but we haven't directly been invited to speak specifically about AHEC programming. But there's definitely been a presence from AHEC represented at that level.
Okay. Well, maybe do you come to Juneau? Have you been to Juneau? When's the last time you were in Juneau?
I started coming last year, and this was my second trip down a couple weeks ago, and that's where I was able to meet with Senator Bjorkman and his staff, and that's probably part of why I'm here right now. So regular trips to Juneau was part of the advice I received from colleagues, that I have to be present and talking about these things in order for anyone to know they're even happening.
Thank you.
Very good, Gloria. Well, thank you very much for joining us today. I really appreciate the presentation and the information that really sets a model for what other people are trying to do as far as workforce by being out in the communities, providing regional training centers, and then getting folks doing trainings, practicums, and didactics in smaller communities as well to really build in those relationships that have staying power. And sharing that Alaskan culture, no matter where you are in Alaska, is a really important part at growing the fabric of our communities and ultimately the Alaskan economy. So thank you very much for joining us today. We will be hearing more and seeing more of you, I'm sure, in the future as we continue to invest in this valuable resource, our healthcare workforce.
So much for the opportunity, Chair. I appreciate it, and you all have a great, wonderful rest of your day.
We certainly will. Have a great day, Gloria. Further business before this committee has concluded. Our next meeting is going to be on Monday of next week. No meeting is scheduled for Friday, March 3rd. We'll meet again Monday, March 6th. We'll take up Senate Bill 83, professional licensing, temporary permits, and Senate Bill 84, money transmission and virtual currency. As there is no further business to come before this committee today, we are adjourned at 2:06 p.m.